everyone, and welcome to our weekly podcast on legal issues in the post-COVID world. My name is Gil Porter, a partner at Haynes & Boone and chair of our COVID-19 task force. Our topic today is a combination of labor employment issues, including some from this week's and next week's webinar. Nathan Koppel, our director of media relations, will continue his role as moderator of this podcast series and will introduce the topics and our speakers. But first, our disclaimer. This podcast is for informational purposes only, is not intended to be legal advice, and does not establish an attorney-client relationship. By their very nature, the topics we discuss on these podcasts will be fast-moving and subject change. Legal advice of any nature should be sought from your legal counsel. Nathan, why don't you take over?
Many thanks. So today is Thursday, April the 23rd, and we're starting to make, it seems, slow and gradual progress on flattening the curve of coronavirus cases, which is leading to increased discussions both here in the U.S. and abroad about restarting the economy and having companies resume their business operations. Today, we've invited two partners to the podcast who have thought long and hard about the checklist of items that companies need to work through to make sure they're sure that their workplaces are ready for employees to return. We've got partner Matt Deffenbach, who splits his time between Haynes & Boone's Houston and Orange County offices. He's chair of the firm's OSHA and Workplace Disasters Practice Group. Matt is joined by Jason Habinski, a New York partner, who is the head of our Labor and Employment Practice Group. Matt and Jason and many of their colleagues at Haynes & Boone have written many wonderful articles about COVID-19 legal issues that employers face. I encourage listeners to check those out at the firm's COVID-19 resource page, which is available at haynesboone.com. Jason, I'm going to turn it over to you first. What are you hearing from clients? Have they started on their return to work plans? Have they formulated them, or are they still in an early stage of figuring this out?
That's a good question, and we have very clearly moved into the next phase of this process. We've been speaking with clients on a daily, even an hourly basis on this next phase, which is the return to work and ensuring that employees are safely brought back into the workplace. And what we're seeing is employers not only want to employ best practices for doing so, but they also want to be cognizant of the legal requirements and the potential employment law pitfalls in bringing employees back to the workplace. So yes, we are seeing our clients, employers who are not only working on these plans, but they're finalizing plans. And that encompasses creating the documentation and communications for bringing employees back to the workplace for the onboarding process, creating new safety protocols, changing and modifying policies. Employers are being proactive on this, and we're seeing it every day at this point.
Matt, I want to turn to you next to outline the various rules and regulations that companies need to consider as they're thinking about returning to work, both in regards to when they resume operations and the precautions they need to take.
There is certainly no lack of reading material when it comes to guidance and regulations. So as to when, it will generally depend on what the state governor's executive orders or the local governments state in terms of when it is safe to return to work. I think even when businesses get the all clear signal from the government, employers are going to look at several variables implicated by some of the employment laws as to whether they will immediately resume or phase in over time. And this gets to the second part of your question, which is how and what procedures may come into play or guidance. And there, I think employers are confronted with what seems like an avalanche of guidance on a daily basis from the various agencies. In order to best navigate that, I think a good place to start is on the safety side and the OSHA guidance on protecting workers, which relies heavily on the CDC. And after employers get comfortable with the safety obligations, I think the next place to look is the EEOC, the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission, which has several helpful protocols on what health-related inquiries and actions can be taken, how to screen employees, questions, accommodation issues. All of those, I think, are helpful to look at. And then finally, the state and local government orders that we've been talking about, those will definitely come into play as they are starting to address whether certain measures are going to be mandatory or recommended, such as the issues with face masks, temperature screens, and so on. So employers will need to carefully review those local and state orders.
And I would imagine to make things more complicated, businesses have to think about this on an office-by-office basis if they've got operations nationwide or and also overseas.
Absolutely. Looking at different regional concerns and the issue that even with that, there'll be a phase-in even at different locations. So I think that's absolutely right.
So Jason, assuming companies have consulted all the necessary regulations, they decide at least some of their locations that they can resume operations. Can you highlight just a few of the precautions that they need to consider to adequately prepare their workplaces?
Certainly, and I can certainly spend much more time than I have now to address this. And during our webinar next week, we are going to focus in more detail on some of these very precautions that employers can take. But the precautions employers can take really are in various different forms. First, as Matt alluded to, is the health screening. Employers will need to be screening for certain symptoms through such measures as temperature checks, asking the right questions through questionnaires, and really an ongoing review of the potential symptoms and diagnoses of employees in order to keep the workplace safe. And with that come all of the potential risks and obligations of keeping certain medical records and making sure you're treating that information confidentiality. Also, employers can certainly take advantage of the guidance we've all learned about social distancing and apply that to the workplace. How can you set it up so that employees come into the office or leave the office in a way where they're not on top of each other and they're not crowds of employees? Can you actually stagger the workforce so they're working different shifts and different days so that there's not a bulk of employees working at the same time? Even just focusing on something like an office setup. In other words, eliminating the common areas where employees would ordinarily congregate and setting up offices and cubicles and the whole setup of the workplace in order to try to make sure that employees aren't working too closely together. And then things as simple as cleaning the office and sanitation and other steps to make sure that the office is as safe and clean as possible.
Can employers dictate how employees get to the office? Is there anything that they can do to try to minimize risk in terms and just in arriving at the office?
An employer can certainly make suggestions and offer to accommodate employees as far as commuting to the office and making it easier for employees to commute to the office in certain ways. I wouldn't demand or require that certain employees get to work in a certain way. For example, in New York, I wouldn't suggest that an employer tell employees that they can't take public transportation, because for some employees that might be the easiest way to get to work, especially if you live in New York City. You're not going to demand or require employees to drive to the office. So employers can certainly accommodate employees and cover certain expenses to the extent it's possible and easier and more reasonable for employees to take certain types of car services rather than take the subway or public transportation. That's certainly something they can offer. And what I would also advise is that employers not pick and choose who they're offering these rights to. In other words, I would apply any sort of guidance on this uniformly across the board so an employer couldn't be deemed to be treating employees differently or discriminating against a certain employee. So can an employer direct an employee to get to work in a certain way? Probably not. Can an employer take steps to make it easier for employees to safely get to work? Sure.
That makes sense. Matt, so assuming businesses will begin some of these screening methods, questionnaires, taking temperatures, they find an employee has symptoms, say a high temperature, or if they somehow find out that an employee is positive for COVID-19, what do they need to do then?
So a few steps there. First is the employee should self-isolate at home. The employer should follow the CDC guidelines for when the employee can discontinue that isolation. Second is the employee would have recently been at work, follow the CDC guidelines for cleaning and disinfecting the work area. The CDC advises to wait, if possible, 24 hours before cleaning or disinfecting. Third, the employer should then think about other potentially exposed coworkers who may have had contact with the individual from the past 14 days, and obviously have an appropriate conversation with them without revealing the identity of the infected employee, to let them know what has happened and to advise them to seek a healthcare provider's opinion if they wish. And then I think the employer needs to think about what to do with those potentially exposed employees and the concept of them potentially self-quarantining for the 14-day period. And then I think the final piece is employers need to be cautious that they fail, that they make sure that they do not forget at least the leave and other laws that may be available. For example, we have the recently passed Family First Coronavirus Response Act, which for employers with less than 500 employees, then some of these events with a sick employee would be covered under the paid leave. And think about the self-quarantine employees as well. So looking at FCRA or the FMLA or workers' comp, et cetera.
It just seems like such a daunting set of responsibilities for businesses to take on. Jason, can you anticipate a time, and are your clients thinking about a time when they don't have to take these precautions and can, you know, completely return to normal? And if so, what kinds of criteria would dictate when we can completely return to normal?
The ultimate hope is that things will be at a point in time where there is a vaccine, where this is something we think about as a really terrible and extraordinary time, and things could go back to normal. But I'm not a doctor or an epidemiologist, so I don't know when that's going to be, and I suspect that's not going to be in the very near term. And even more so, what I think this can serve as an opportunity to do is really look at best practices and lessons learned on ways to make the workplace safer. You know, whether or not it's the coronavirus or the flu or a cold, I still think employers will want to take advantage of the ways that they have maximized the safety of their employees and made it a workplace where other employees are less likely to be susceptible to something that's contagious, have a workplace that is safe in the way that it's set up and structured, in a way where an employer has set up certain policies that protect employees who may have gotten sick or might be more susceptible and need accommodation. So even if we do get to a point, and we all hope we get to a point where we're much safer and the coronavirus is less of a risk, I still think what employers will want to do and be happy to do is really take advantage of the lessons they've learned under these extraordinary times in a way which has benefited the workplace and protected its employees and made the workplace safer.
That makes sense. Well, Jason, thank you very much. Matt, much appreciated. I'm going to pivot now and turn to another issue that businesses have to consider as they resume operations. Unfortunately, we've seen a real rise in discrimination and bias against people of Asian descent. There have been horrible stories of violence and bigotry directed at Asians, both here in the U.S. and abroad, who have been unfairly scapegoated for the pandemic. Invited today, Tamara Devitt to speak to us. She is a partner in our Orange County office and is in our labor and employment practice group. Tamara, I'm curious what sorts of things employers can do to prepare for a potential issues around harassment when they resume operations.
Sure. I think employers need to have a plan, really, for returning to work, much like they need to have a plan for dealing with some of these health and safety issues that Jason and Matt talked about. They need to have a plan for, as you described, this increased risk of harassment and discrimination because of what's going on in the world as it relates to the COVID-19 pandemic. We'd recommend a few things that employers think about beyond just having a policy that, of course, prohibits harassment and discrimination. We'd recommend that employers educate and train really everyone on these topics, not just management, but with a special focus on managers. So, you know, managers are the eyes and ears and voice of the company's culture and also set an example for really everyone in the workplace. So training should be tailored depending on the workplace, but it really should focus on giving managers and employees specific tools and techniques, not only to recognize and respond to incidents of harassment, but also, you know, specific things they can say if they see something in the workplace that's inappropriate or hear something in the workplace that's inappropriate. This sometimes makes people uncomfortable. They don't know what to say, and so they don't say anything. So the training should focus on giving folks these tools on what to say, right? Don't say that. It's not okay. You need to not say that. I think one other important thing companies can do is emphasize the message from the top down, right? So in addition to just providing formal training to employees and managers, it's important that leadership recognize this is an issue and find ways to spread that message. We prohibit and don't tolerate any form of racial discrimination or harassment in the workplace. For example, a leader could put it in the company's newsletter. You know, with a lot of employees being remote now, more and more people are actually paying attention to those types of things. It's a really good way for a company or an employer to share the message about its culture and its policies and culture against discrimination and harassment.
Would employers have to maybe somehow revise their harassment policy in light of the current climate, or at least look at it with a view of what's happened lately?
I think employers should always be looking at their policies from time to time to make sure they reflect not only current federal law, but state laws that might have specific requirements. And this is certainly an opportunity for employers to take a look at what it says. And the policy should certainly define harassment and give examples. It should importantly give employees a safe place to report any type of incident. Anonymous hotline numbers are great, but if that's not possible, it's a good idea to identify someone neutral that employees trust that would be perceived as somebody good to make a report to. And then along those same lines, the policy should prohibit retaliation for making any type of report of harassment. The policy should specifically say, you know, what happens if a report is made and what will happen if inappropriate behavior is found to have happened. And then importantly, the policy needs to be disseminated among the employees and managers need to know what it says, right? You'd be surprised how often we see and talk to managers who don't have any idea what the company's anti-harassment policy says.
And what if you do see harassment? I mean, there have been so many offensive memes and jokes that have been circulated, it seems like, since the pandemic. And what if someone is a victim of harassment in the workplace? What would you recommend that an employer do?
If an employer becomes aware of an incident of harassment or makes a finding that there's been harassment or discrimination in the workplace, the employer actually has a legal obligation to take prompt remedial action. Now, remedial action isn't defined in the law other than effective action designed to stop any harassment. So it can mean a lot of different things depending on the nature of the conduct that violated the policy. It could mean training, it could mean coaching and counseling, but it could mean something as serious as written discipline or even termination of employment. And it's important that employers, you know, make clear in their policy that what they're going to do if harassment is found to have occurred, and that they do it, and that they share, you know, with the employees and persons with a need to know what happened to the extent appropriate in the workplace.
Jason, Matt, Tamara, that's all very useful. And thank you, our listeners, for listening to our COVID-19 podcast series. As a reminder, you can find our podcasts and other content, including this week's webinar on discrimination and crisis and next week's webinar titled Back to Work, at haynesboone.com, HaynesBoone.com. Please also feel free to reach out to me or to Nathan Koppel if you have any suggestions for future topics. Our podcasts are available on our website and also on popular podcast platforms, including Apple, Stitcher, and others. Take care, all, and good night.